If I had a good day at work, I'm super happy. If I had a bad day, I'm just...
Anxiety, heat, depression.
Just bad and not in a good mood and also infectious, you know, to other people. Yeah.
I call it dream keepers versus dream stealers. You said the same thing. And I surround myself with winners. That's it. When I wake up, my focus is different because everybody around me focus is different. And you create those winner circles, which it takes the exact mindset of people to raise the bar. Because it's easy to look at those guys that are not in the winner circle and be around. They can really suck
the life out of you.
Like everything.
Because they also don't want to see you succeed.
Right. My life is comprised of winning circles exclusively. I do not have non-contributing energy in my life at all.
Period.
Zero.
So, zero.
What's interesting zero. About what your friend said, that's how I live my life. So when Relativity went into a hostile takeover, sure. And here's what's funny, I was going to tell you the opposite. You're like, you sat and thought, well, should I have not backed out? They came to me, I sat in a room, they basically offered me, let's just call it, what would have been come to the billions of dollars eventually, to just walk away. Mm. I'm like, I started this thing. There's no, fuck you. And they're like, otherwise you're going to have to put it in, basically, it wasn't even you're going to have to put it in a chapter. It was, we're taking it from you and we're going to chop it up. But we're going to pay you to basically go away, right? And I remember I was actually sitting in I've been in a 10 hour room with 20 lawyers in Century City, one of those like, we're trying to figure it out. You know, the all nighters.
Sure.
It's 4 a.m. I called the time who was the president of my company and, you know, we'd been there not since the beginning, but for a long time and a good friend had equity. And I just said, dude, if we do this, like, we're selling out. And all these people that came to work for us, at the time we had 1,000 employees, but call it the first 80, were still there. I'm like, they're there because of us. Mm-hmm. And if we walk away and they, like, we're kind of, it's not about the money. And we, like, we can do this. And so we basically told the largest corporate raider in the world, his name's Paul Singer, to fuck off. He had taken down the government of Argentina.
Wow.
He had taken down the Congo. He had taken down, I mean, so there's a saying even to this day, if you see Paul Singer start to buy stock on your balance sheet and public company, you better run.
Oh, so he's accumulating.
He was doing that. He did it to do it to Time Warner, AT&T. He's done the biggest companies in the world. He was on every steering committee when the auto companies all went bankrupt.
Wow.
Took them all over. Mm. So he had accumulated in a weird way. He accumulated it when I was private. But he did it through trust, through getting his private equity guy to spend 8 years
different proxies.
Buying, I'm going to invest you another $100 million with you. Well, okay, cool. Just get a little more control. It started, actually, nobody knows this. I didn't even tell this. It's never told before. I created Relativity. I had no partners. I had no debt. I had an original partner, Relativity, who I bought out. And when it was kind of called Relativity Management. And had just done Marvel and was doing all the studio deals and was making more money than I ever thought I could make. I was doing 30, 40 movies a year, and I was, you know, my quote was $2.5 million a movie, and I owned back end, and we were doing TV, and I didn't have one shareholder. Mm-hmm. Loving it. And but I did do capital, structured finance for vehicles specific to studios. So, like, I did the Marvel, actually, we're going to have the guy on who was at Merrill Lynch. It was the first guy that said yes to me, who gave me the $600 million for Marvel. But it was institutional bank money that was purely to a deal, not ownership of mine.
Correct.
And so I'd go to New York and I'd visit these hedge funds that were inside of that, you know, because a bank would underwrite the cap structure and then they'd go syndicate it. I'd go meet with guys who were syndicates and they'd get updates that say, yeah, I met with Universal yesterday, here's the slate, whatever. So I'm having sushi with one of the guys and he says, you know, we don't invest in deals. I'm like, what do you mean? You've invested in the last three through one was, I think it was Citibank, before that was Deutsche Bank, before that it was... I think it was, I don't even remember what the bank was, Societe Generale or something. But it was $50 million, $100 million that they had put in, to $150 million bucks through three deals in a couple of years. I'm like, you put $150 million in deals. Of course you do. Like, no. We invest in deals to learn about an industry. Mm-hmm. And we've never been in entertainment. So we did those deals to learn about the industry. And here's what we've learned. We want to own a piece of your business. Mm. And I'm like, it's not for sale. Like, I flattered. I have another deal that'll be coming down the pike. You can buy into it. It's, I think it was Sony. It was the first time two slates were joined, Sony Universal together, you know. And he's like, no, no, no. And I was like, he stayed on me. And he was worked at the venture capital side of this company, Elliott. And the internet wasn't what it was today. You see, everything wasn't really public knowledge. And he started throwing up big numbers. And I made plenty of money. I didn't care. But I was like, never had a big chunk like that. Mm-hmm. So I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take every document that I've ever signed in the company, and I'll take every bank statement and every tax return, and I'm going to stick it in a back conference room. At the time, there wasn't even a virtual conference. It's 2006. Mm-hmm. And you guys can spend as much time in there as you want. I'm not going to say no. I'm not going to say counter. Take your time. There's no one else looking at it. You're not competing. I don't want to sell any piece, and I won't sell majority. But if you want to buy a minority interest, the money's coming to me because the company doesn't need money. Go through all those documents, make me an offer, I'll say yes or no. And they spent, I don't know, 3 months and lawyers and accountants, and they came back and they made me an offer, and I was like, oh shit, for 25% of the company. I was like, okay, I'll take it. So I did, and got this money. And what they were doing was, that was 2006. So between 2006 and 2010, I'd have a deal I wanted to do. And they'd say, no, don't go to a bank, because I was getting banks underwrite it, so I didn't dilute anything. We'll give you another $500 million, enough to waste the time, and we'll just put it into the company.
Yeah.
And then they'd say, but we just want this one more right. It wasn't debt. It was just like, we want a voting right. You know. Then it was like, hey, we're going to put in $500 million more dollars, because we were doing this Universal deal, but we kind of think we should pick your CFO. And I was like, cool. You mean I don't have to have my CFO report to me or worry about that? Amazing. Hire the CFO. Right, yeah. Done. You know, and then it was like, so by the time it got to this place where it got to where they literally played the long game, I'm talking years, to where they finally could say, hey, guess what? You can't raise debt or equity without our approval. And we have control over all the accounts.
Yeah.
And I was just like, so they literally took me in a room and said, here's how it's going to work. And so we spent all night negotiating, and I said, no. And I put it into a Chapter 11. I spent 2 years fighting it.
You detonated it. That's awesome.
I detonated it and then said, but I'm going to buy it back.
Sure.
And they paid, they hired a firm called Rubenstein that they were paying millions and millions of dollars a month to put bad press every day about me. So I couldn't buy it from the bankruptcy, so they could. Mm. And somehow I managed to still do it. I remember waking up every morning, I'd pull the covers down. I didn't want to look at my phone because I didn't want to see what bad shit they were writing about me in an article. And I managed to do it. They got it back. I remember sitting there, I literally won in court. Nobody, you know, I had a $150 million fraud lawsuit, which I won. It was on the front page of every newspaper being sued for fraud. And when I won, not just won, but won in a three-time summary judgment where the judge said, I'm throwing it out because you can't even prove you ever spoke to him, let alone that he defrauded you. Come back. They come back. Threw it out again. You still haven't proven he ever said a word to you, sent you an email, blah, blah, blah. Threw it out. Again, finally said, that's it, it's out. But that cost me $7.5 million in legal fees that I didn't get back, and front page of fraud. And then when I won, I don't even think they ran it on page 52. It was like, you know, oh, by the way, this thing was dropped. And I look back and I'm like, I wish I actually just walked away, because I did lose 2 years of my life. I mean, it was I learned a lot, but I got it back and the heart wasn't in it anymore.
Yeah.
I had the company back and people were there, and we came to work every day, and you know, we tried, and I was just like, but it destroyed that, whatever the fun was in it.
Yeah.
And what I didn't realize is, as much as I'd become the business, it's when I was like, I'm not the business.
Sure.
It's not what defines me. And I actually look back, and you know, we ended up selling it to another hedge fund, and it's profitable again today, and they're doing great.
Nice.
But I never talk about it. I don't be like, hey, do you guys see what Relativity did? Like, because.
Yeah, there's this thing called creditors committee, which is
I dealt with it.
Yeah, which is the thing that, you know, ends up costing you sometimes the company.
So they were on my side.
Yeah. You control the creditors committee. That's great.
Well, no, I didn't control them. They looked at what was going on, and I put all the money together. Despite first they were they were against me, obviously, and then when I put the money together and put the plan together, you know, they turned around and approved. They were 100% approved it. Like we paid every single secured creditor and then some. Everybody made money. There was one group that lost money, and that was it. But it wasn't that. We got the company back from the creditors committee, and we got it back from everyone. And it just it wasn't the same. And I remember I spent 2 years in hell getting it back, and then I spent a year in hell having it back. And then I spent a year trying to figure out who I was without it, and then I realized it had nothing to do with who I was.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the other side of had you stayed.
Yeah. Yeah, I realized, too, that none of this identified me. You know, business, work, none of it identifies me. It's not what people are going to talk about in my eulogy. It doesn't identify my character. So then I had to really realign myself and figure out what was really the most important stuff to me. And while I was going through all of this stuff with business, it's in every venture. It always is. I realized I was transforming physically.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and I realized that, you know, hey, like, what's going on with
feeling
me?
Feeling bad.
If I had a good day at work, I'm super happy. If I had a bad day, I'm just...
Anxiety, heat, depression.
Just bad and not in a good mood, and also infectious, you know, to other people. Yeah. So then I had to recalibrate myself and really understand that, hey, you know, I need to, first of all, learn how to be present. So psilocybin helped me how to learn how to be present in meditation. I practice TM.
Me too.
Learn how to.
Every day.
Yeah, Denny.
Every day.
Denny taught me, you know, Denny over there.
Tom Knowles is who I actually learned from.
Okay. So that helped me a lot. And I realized that I wanted to practice gratitude. Mm-hmm. I really did sincerely. And I never really could until I learned how to be present. I learned how to be present. And then when you're in that state, then you could actually truly practice real gratitude. And I realized that it wasn't business, it wasn't money, it wasn't any of that stuff at all. For me, it was health, wellness, fitness, spirituality, my family and my friendships, and that's all it was. And that's all
that's our
that,
whole show.
That's our
yeah,
whole, that's
and
our
that's
whole
all thing. That defines my character, and that's what people will talk about in my eulogy.
When you talk
they don't
about
care
being,
about business and
when
work.
You talk about being present. People don't understand how important it is to be where your feet are. So we call it Wi-Fi, like be where your feet are today. And it allows your brain to really refocus and stay in the now, which is very hard to do because if you're living, you're thinking about what's happening tomorrow or you think about what happened in the past, it creates that anxiety. It creates this pressure on yourself. But when you stay in the moment and you create the winner's circle,